Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
All-Star break is over, and it's go time. Less than 2 weeks until the MLB trade deadline on August 3rd, latest it's ever been, is this year. Welcome back to Nosebleeds, WFUV Sports' baseball podcast, and we'll talk about it all. I'm Matt Slanger, Tucker Austin, Emma Leonardi. Lot to get to, as always, guys. We'll touch on the Yankees, who are clearly still adjusting to life without Aaron Judge. They lose 2-3 to the Dodgers coming out of the break. Don't really know what else there is to say about the Mets, except that their season is abject failure, and the trade deadline is probably going to be the most exciting part of their season until the offseason. I'm also going to talk about the AL wildcard, which is suddenly very interesting. Red Sox have won 13 in a row. Orioles have won 7 in a row. Those are probably the two hottest teams in baseball, and they'll actually meet for a three-game series, the first of which tonight at Fenway Park. So pretty much nobody is selling in the American League or the National League, really. But could Mason Miller be on the move? Padres have talked about trading him a year after they traded away the number two prospect in all of baseball in Leo DeVries' form. Going to get to all that and more here on Nosebleeds, including maybe the Hall of Fame induction ceremony in Cooperstown this weekend that our very own Tucker Austin, along with some more FUV representation, will reportedly be in attendance for. So a jam-packed episode to get to. And good to see both of you guys.
Yeah, good to be here, Max. You know, it has been a rough adjustment for these Yankees, I would say, in terms of dealing with without Aaron Judge and without Giancarlo Stanton. They've been missing plenty of guys in the stretch since Judge actually left the lineup. And they've got pitching injuries, too, now that they were dealing with at the start of the year and then kind of reared their heads again in the middle of the season. So definitely working through some things. But other than that, I'm doing great and ready for a good episode.
Yes, I am too. I can't wait to argue with Tucker about the Yankees and perhaps Aaron Judge again. Maybe not get into our full argument again, but I'm excited to talk some baseball today.
All right, well, let's start with the Yankees, because of the New York teams, they're really the one that is worth talking about other than the moves the Mets might make at the beginning of August. Obviously, big series this weekend against the Dodgers. Not necessarily a litmus test of where they are, because both the Yankees and the Dodgers are missing so many pieces. You mentioned Judge and Stanton. Dodgers are missing Snell, Glasnow. Edwin Diaz is scheduled to return in next week, but he's still not back. So both of these teams are coming into the series shorthanded. But, I mean, there were some concerning signs for the Yankees, and what they have been for now, what is it, 35 games or so that Aaron Judge has been on the injured list, is that Cody Bellinger and Trent Grisham, Ben Rice as your top offensive options are probably not good enough to get you to where you want to go. And they really struggled this series. I mean, you look at the game they won Sunday night. Obviously, you love to win a game, but there were a lot of opportunities where the Yankees had a chance to bust the door open. They let the Dodgers hang around. Tommy Edman hits a solo home run. The Yankees do end up winning that game courtesy of Jazz Chisholm and David Bednar. But the offense, I think, right now, as it was the bullpen for most of the year, is now jump to the number one concern for the Yankees, because they just don't know when Aaron Judge is going to return.
Yeah, this was a really tough series for the Yankees to swallow against the Dodgers. You mentioned both teams are shorthanded, but honestly, the Yankees are infinitely more shorthanded than the Dodgers were coming into this series. The Dodgers had essentially their entire hitting lineup there. The Yankees lack offensive capability without a guy like Aaron Judge in the lineup. And you see it clear as day with the top of the order. Those guys you mentioned, Bellinger, Grisham, Rice, who are usually the second or third options behind a guy like Judge or Stanton, And having guys like Judge and Stanton in the lineup usually make them a bit better. And I think you're seeing exactly what happens when those guys are out of the lineup. Pitchers are able to attack and more carefully go after these hitters that are usually getting better pitches to hit when Judge and Stanton are in the lineup. The Yankees were outscored 11-4 across this entire three-game set. It's kind of a miracle they even won the last game. Like you said, they had plenty of opportunities to break that game open, but still only managed two runs and kind of got away with a win carried by that bullpen. And the bullpen has been really good for this team. It's kind of what's been keeping them in the running in the division at all. The pitching as a whole, I should say, the starting pitching and the bullpen for the Yankees have been keeping them in position with Judge out of the lineup. And against a team as good as the Dodgers, this is the best team in baseball. We can't really mince it, but I was happy initially with the Friday game, the fact that they were in it for the full, basically for the full game. Wound up losing that game, but again, when the offense doesn't show up, it doesn't show up. Same thing happened with game one of the doubleheader on Sunday. And again, same thing with game two, but they actually managed to pull it out. So I think when you look at this series as a whole, if you're a Yankee fan, you're happy they took at least a game and didn't get swept out of Yankee Stadium. Now the objective is to kind of switch gears and look at this Pirates series, because Pittsburgh is not a bad team anymore. This isn't a series that you can kind of just like throw away and say, oh, they should win two of three kind of with one hand tied behind their back. That is not the case. This is a Pirates team that is hungry. They're much more talented than they have been in years past, and they're a lot more cohesive. It's going to take a lot for the Yankees to get by them. The offense has to wake up. If it doesn't wake up now, when will it? And if it's Aaron Judge coming back that's going to wake it up, sure, that's great. But if it doesn't wake up before Aaron Judge comes back, there's always the possibility that Judge coming back actually doesn't do anything, and the offense just kind of stays this quiet. So I think for me, I need to see the offense wake up without Aaron Judge in the lineup, like before he comes back, so that you can kind of sort of, to the arguments that we've had in the past, Emma, about Aaron Judge and his importance to the Yankee lineup. I think I kind of almost agree with you a little bit more at this point, where I would love to see something from this Yankee offense without Judge and Stanton in the lineup, so that we at least know that they're capable of producing on their own. Then you add Judge to that lineup and it becomes almost an unstoppable force. Again, though, it really needs to get there.
I am so happy you said that. I can't believe you just said that I was right. I'm so happy. But I am right. And this like proves it. Like, it's like the offense just keeps not showing up. And like, you know, I force myself to watch Yankees games so that I can report on it in situations like this. But it really just has been like, even I've been frustrated, and I don't even like the Yankees. Like, I don't even totally want them to win. Like, I'm like, obviously for New York, I want them to win. And, you know, for people like Tucker, who I know, I want them to win. But it's just so like hard to even be like, oh no, they should have won, when they shouldn't have, because the offense isn't showing up. And I think to be a really great team, you cannot rely on just one person in your lineup. If you have a full lineup of people, like nine people, you have to use every single person, and every single person should be putting in effort consistently and trying at least to like get on base, because the more you're on base, the more runs you're likely to score, even just by an RBI or whatever it is. Like you're more likely to score if you're getting on base. It does not need to be a home run. It does not need to be anything crazy, but just put in consistent effort. Do not rely on people like Judge, like, to be in your lineup and to save you. Like, it just should not, you should not be relying on one person. You are on a baseball team for a reason. You were chosen to be on the Yankees. The Yankees are historically a good team. You need to be putting in the effort to make this a good team.
Yeah, I definitely think you're onto something, Emma, because the Yankees, the approach for the Yankees has definitely stayed the same since Judge's absence, but the approach needed to change. Like you were saying, they kind of, in games this year, they've tended to rely on late heroics, a la Jazz Chisholm's home run late against the Dodgers to win the final game of the series. You could also go back to Jazz's late heroics against the Nationals right before the All-Star break, or Ben Rice's heroics against the Nationals right before the All-Star break. For some reason, the Yankee hitters have kind of gotten it into their heads that they need to be heroes, all of them, 1 through 9, instead of trying to string hits together there was one point in that 2-1 win on Sunday where the Yankee hitters actually did start to kind of string things together. But then it kind of just completely fell apart. That was the point in the game. I'm not quite remembering right now who was on the hill for the Dodgers, but he worked out of a serious jam.
Fifth inning, Brock Stewart.
Yes, it was Stewart in the fifth inning with the bases loaded, and he wound up working out of it. So that was the one chance they had to blow the game open, and they just couldn't get it done because that's where the momentum kind of finally stopped. So I definitely agree. It's 100% an approach issue, and it just seems to entirely hinge on Judge not being in the lineup. And so the question kind of becomes, just when is he coming back? And that's kind of been the question for the past month or so.
Yeah, I mean, at least the way I look at it, and I probably don't watch or follow the Yankees as closely as either of you guys, but I mean, if you're waiting for Aaron Judge to come back and solve all of the Yankees' offensive issues, that seems like kind of a hope strategy for me, at least. And we know about Aaron Judge's track record of performing in the postseason. It's not like one guy transforms an entire offense. You look at this offense and what they've been doing, it's just not good enough. Their catcher position is absolutely a black hole. And I don't know where they're going to improve it at the trade deadline, because nobody wants to sell. There's like 24 or 25 teams that genuinely feel like they have a chance to make the postseason. And as an architect of a sports franchise, the hardest thing to do is to admit that, yeah, we failed and we have to make our team worse at the trade deadline. So I don't think anybody wants to go and trade away. And obviously we know that, you know, at least in baseball tradition, the last team people want to trade and help out is the Yankees. So I think it's going to be hard to improve their offense, at least by a good margin. That last at bat in the fifth inning with Anthony Volpe when there were two outs was just awful. I think they have some talented pieces, right? Ben Rice is a really good player. He's probably going to finish top, what, five, even if he tails off in the MVP voting. Cody Bellinger, my favorite player of all time when he was a Dodger, is a great player. Great defensively, great offensively. I just find it hard. The one thing that I keep coming back to with the Yankees that gives me reassurance is that I just don't know, even with the Red Sox winning 13 in a row and these teams streaking as of late, if there's really anybody else in the American League that's going to give them trouble in a series. I mean, the Rays are good, but do we honestly believe that they're going to make a run in the postseason with what they've done in the previous years? Outside of 2020, they've always kind of collapsed because they don't have, I don't know if it's the talent or the starting pitching when they get to the big stage. They're good at beating teams like the Marlins and the Rockies, but when you go up against the Yankees, the Red Sox in a five-game series where there's 40,000 people in the stands, that's when it gets maybe harder. But I do think that for the Yankees, it's imperative for their offense to turn it around quickly, because if you look at the standings, you know, the Yankees still have a sizable lead, but it's not a ton, right? I mean, it's 4.5 games. There are teams climbing up against them. So they have a bad 2, 3, 4 weeks before Aaron Judge comes back. It could start to get a little dicey in the wild card picture. And I don't know what their strength of schedule is looking like or what they're gonna be able to do at the trade deadline. But again, they have to start turning things around without Aaron Judge, because that's the thing about a team like the Dodgers, for example. Like, they don't care about the regular season at all. I can guarantee you that they did not lose a bit of sleep at all because they lost that game yesterday, because they just don't care. They have so much a lead in the division, they don't even care if they end up a wild card team. And they have the luxury because they are slow playing guys. Whereas the Yankees, you feel like they have these guys on the injured list and they kind of got them back soon or get reinforcements. Otherwise, it's going to be on the guys on the field right now to turn around. And I don't know if they have the ability to do that with how they've played the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Well, Max, I'm actually glad you mentioned strength of schedule, because this is probably going to be the Yankees' biggest obstacle, at least until the trade deadline. They're not playing a team that's under 500 before the trade deadline. Their next, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Their next 6 opponents are above 500 teams. And then they play the Seattle Mariners, who right now are sitting at 500. So it's not, the difficulty of schedule is not going anywhere. The Yankees have their work cut out for them over the next like couple of weeks or so. So yeah, we really do need to see something out of this offense now, like today. because otherwise this is going to be a gauntlet that could very well put the Yankees in an outside looking in kind of position. You mentioned that big lead in the wild card. Yeah, not as big as it may actually seem, because all it takes is one really bad week of baseball with the way that some of these other teams in the American League are starting to put like string wins together. The Yankees could very well slip out of position. The weirdest thing, though, to me is that the Yankees have kind of been, they've been dead focused on the division. They have not really been that concerned with the wild card picture because they are still within two games. They're a game and a half back of the Tampa Bay Rays. And I'll agree with you on the fact that I don't think the Tampa Bay Rays are going to be able to make that much noise in October. But you do mention the 1 year in 2020 when they went to the World Series, they got through the Yankees on their way to that series. So when it comes to head-to-head in the postseason in recent memory, the Rays actually have the upper hand on the Yankees. So if they were to meet in the postseason, I would not underestimate the Tampa Bay Rays. They're a team that is very familiar with the Yankees. They know how to beat them. So you can't take anything for granted against those guys. I would say that there are two big stories with the Yankees going the rest of the way. The one that you mentioned with the offense has to wake up, and the other story would be, what do you do about the catcher position? Because as you said, not a lot of teams looking to sell at this deadline. So at this point, it's gotten down to really two names that stick out to me, even though I'm not particularly moved by either of them. The options are kind of just Ryan Jeffers and Hunter Goodman. Hunter Goodman, though, between the two of them, I think I would go there. The Rockies are terrible again this year, and not as bad as years past, but they're still nowhere close to being talked about in the postseason. So they're usually sellers. My only issue is I don't know who the Rockies would want from the Yankees outside of guys at the farm system.
They don't want, like, two top bad prospects.
Exactly, because, like, you can't package Anthony Volpe in any kind of a trade for someone valuable at this point. It's been too long of him underachieving, and they've missed their window on getting value out of him.
Unfortunately, baseball can't trade a bunch of bad players for a good player. Wish it were that.
Yeah. Even if it's five players for one, if they're all terrible, the Rockies still aren't taking that if they're smart.
Got to give up something good to get something good.
Exactly. So, I mean, Hunter Goodman hit three home runs the other night. He's a right-handed, good hitting catcher, solid defensively. The Yankees, it's so weird for the Yankees right now because basically anyone would be better than the offensive production that they're getting out of the catcher position right now. JC Ascara, not really a solution, and a left-handed bat as well, so he doesn't really give you a different dynamic from Austin Wells. Wells is batting well below 200 this season, and he's played a majority of the games. Ali Sanchez was a massive Band-Aid to that situation because he just happens to hit right-handed. So I think the obvious move at the deadline, they have to address the catcher position. Nowhere else is really that strapped in terms of depth. I mean, Caballero at shortstop is pretty much the way to go. The Yankees are abysmally below 500 when Anthony Volpe starts at shortstop, but they're several games positive when Caballero starts there. So I think if you address something at the deadline, it's got to be the catcher position, but it's going to take a lot to move somebody.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. I think one thing you could also look at, and this might be the last point we make on the Yankees before we move on to some of the other storylines around baseball, unless Emma has something to add. She'll give her a chance after this point I make. But what I will say is that a way to improve a baseball roster at a deadline doesn't always have to be addressing the positions of need. In fact, I would argue that the best way to improve a baseball roster at a deadline is to improve your strength sometimes, because you have to look at the supply and demand. And there's always a ton of bullpen arms. Even in this year, where it's a crazy seller's market, there's still going to be teams that are selling off bullpen arms. And the example I'll use is, look at the Padres over the last 2 years. They've had subpar offense and mediocre starting pitching. And at the trade deadline, because they haven't had enough capital to address those areas, they've decided, let's double down on our strength and go make a super pen. And they've acquired guys like Mason Miller and Tanner Scott and Jason Adam. And I'm forgetting some guys, but they've acquired a ton of great bullpen arms to make their pen this huge strength. And they have guys that they had guys last year where you felt like they could get a lead by the fifth inning, game over. game over. And now it didn't necessarily work out for them because the starting pitching wasn't good enough. But that's not an issue the Yankees have, at least from a starting pitching point. They've got Gerrit Cole and Schlittler, and I don't know, I guess Rodon will probably come back before the end of the year, right? So they should have enough starting pitching to at least get them to a pretty far point in the playoffs. So if you can address the catcher position, which they do need to get, maybe it's not a long-term replacement, maybe it's a guy who you feel really good about defensively or can lay down a sack bunt, but you want to improve your offense, a great way to do that is make your pitching better.
Yeah, I completely agree with your guys' points. And I definitely think that like I've said everything that I need to say about the Yankees right now, except that, and the audience can't really see this, but I'm currently wearing a Charleston River Dogs shirt, which historically has been the minor league affiliate for the Yankees, and then is now with the Rays. So I thought it was interesting that we were talking about the Rays in comparison to the Yankees. But that was just a fun little anecdote I had.
That's good. My new favorite minor league team is the Charleston River Cats now. That's a good name.
Love that.
Okay. Let's talk about let's spend like 3 minutes on the Mets. I don't know if any of us really want to do it. They played baseball somewhere this weekend and presumably won or lost, though I don't know which. Trade deadline, rumors, Francisco Lindor maybe could be on the move. He's not one of the names they've deemed untouchable. I think if they can trade him, they should. He's not a contract that's going to age well, but you're going to have to eat a lot of it and probably package something. I don't know how much you're going to get in return from him because he's owed so much money. But I don't know. The Mets are really in a black hole right now. They feel very directionless. So I just think they need to sell off every single thing they can get and start back over in the off season.
Yeah, no,
I
that's not
don't.
a ridiculous take there. Sorry, Emma.
It's
But
okay.
you have the second highest payroll in Major League Baseball, and you have a 2% chance to make the playoffs like 3 days or after the first series post All-Star break. Yeah, something is seriously wrong. You mentioned moving Lindor. I still am not 100% sure they even do that. Yes, they left him off their very short list of protected players at this deadline. But I don't know. As we get closer to the deadline, it might become harder to actually move him. He homered yesterday in their win against the Phillies. They won the series against the Philadelphia Phillies. They took two of three in Philadelphia on the other side of the All-Star break. So certainly a solid start to the second half, and I talked about this on One-on-One on Saturday a few days ago, but the Mets really seem like they're just like a couple weeks of really solid baseball away from being back in this postseason conversation. So I think a lot depends on how the next week or what, how the next 2 weeks goes. I would say it's about 13 days, 13 or 14 days from today is the trade deadline. So the Mets have just around 2 weeks to see whether or not this team is going to start to put things together in the second half. So
Come
I
on,
think if I'm the Mets,
they're not
I
getting
hold
back
off
in
on
the
Lindor.
postseason. There's no way. How far are they? They're 10 games out. They got to pass like nine teams.
Yeah,
Yeah, but
it's not
I'm not
happening.
moved. I'm not moved by any of these teams that are ahead of them. The Reds fell off the face of the planet after having a good April and like start of May. The Giants are terrible. The Padres are going to sell at the deadline, as we've been saying. The Nationals can't close a game to save their lives. The Diamondbacks just made like the largest comeback in franchise history. They were down by like 8 runs. So like shout out to them for that.
That
But
was
I am
cool.
not moved by a majority of these National League wild card teams. That's why I feel like if the Mets really just put together like a week and a half even of solid baseball, string some wins together, they could get right back into the mix. It is not fully dead yet.
I understand that, but look at the pure mathematics of it. It's so hard to pass nine teams in the standings. The Mets are 10 games out with
Yeah.
whatever it's 62 to play. Let's say they go 42-20. That would be incredible, right? You'd be blown away if the Mets go 42-20. If any of the teams above them go 32 or 30 or better, they're on the outside looking in.
Yeah.
The
I feel
Red
like
Sox were just what? The Red Sox were just, I think, 37-48 before they rattled off 13 straight wins.
Do you think the Mets are going to
Like,
rattle up 13 straight wins?
Okay.
They have the second
I
highest
feel like
payroll in baseball. It's certainly possible based on the like on paper.
Come on.
I feel like okay, as like the resident, resident Met speaking, I feel like there are certain parts of each thing like that everyone just said that I agree with and that I disagree with. I think I agree with Max on the like I don't think that we're seeing postseason. Like I have given up, and maybe that's the pessimist in me, but I just do not see us making getting 13 straight wins. Like I just don't see that happening. I don't think that we're going to end the season in as bad of a shape as we are now. So that is where I kind of like agree with Tucker on that. We just had that series at in Philadelphia against the Phillies after the All-Star game, and we won that series. We did lose a game, but we won the series, and that's good. I agree with Tucker on the Lindor conversation. I don't think Lindor is going anywhere. I've said this in the past, and I feel like people are starting to come around to that conversation. I think if he does leave, it's gonna surprise me. It's gonna surprise SNY. I've been tracking their reports on the trade and like insider information. Lindor has said that he would like to remain in New York. He'd like to remain a Met. And like I just don't think it's gonna happen. I think that it's really ridiculous that as a fan base, everybody's turning on Lindor when he has historically been very good for like to us. And I think that him having just a really, really bad season is not a testament to what his career has been and can be in the future again. And I think that like I know that there's inside clubhouse stuff that are like rumors and stuff like that with team dynamics and stuff like that, but I think Soto and Lindor stay as staples of the team. I think you try and like again build. I know that that's what they tried to do in the off season, but I think again you try to build around that. Clearly, the building that they tried to do in the off season didn't work. So I think you try and you rebuild around them for the trade and see if that can make it a little bit better. But I think that I really have to. Again, I don't think that we're seeing the postseason, but I think that I'm going to be a little bit optimistic here and say that I think that we aren't going to end in as bad shape as we are currently. I think that we can make a decent like ending for ourselves and look forward to next season. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And they're getting some pieces back as they get healthier. They've been ravaged by injuries, as has a lot of teams this year, as they are every year. I don't even know if they can move Lindor. He's got $170 million on his contract. They're not
Yeah,
allowed to
exactly.
cancel.
That's a whole different dynamic of the
Yeah.
situation. Is like a $34 million a year player, but I don't think he's worth $34 million a year anymore. This is not
No.
Cleveland's Lindor that we're talking about. This is post Mets tenure Lindor. And
I don't
like you
disagree with
said
that.
earlier, the Mets are probably going to have to eat a large portion of his contract just to get him out if they want him off the team. But at that point, what's even the point of getting rid of
Yeah.
him if you're not saving the payroll, you know? So I think it's going to be harder to move Lindor than like current rumblings in the media make it out to be. Them leaving him off the protected list was like kind of set off some alarm bells that probably shouldn't have rang. It's less likely than I think a lot of people think that Lindor actually winds up in a different uniform by August 3rd.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I just think from the standpoint of we also don't know if baseball's going to be played next year. Guys are going to lose a year of service time. Goes from six down to five. So a guy that would be a free agent in 2031 is now going to be a free agent in 2030. So the contracts are just going faster, and it's going to be so hard to move a guy like that. I think honestly, the biggest name that could potentially be moved at the deadline is Mason Miller. He is obviously the best closer in baseball. I don't know if you guys saw what he did a couple of nights ago in Kansas City, but the Padres had the Royals rather had the bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth with nobody out, and Mason Miller struck out the next three guys to get the game into extra innings. That was super impressive. I think he would be a huge addition. The Yankees, I think, could be a team that trades for Mason Miller. Double down on your strength, maybe. Bednar and Miller in the back of your bullpen. You feel good about that. Maybe the Red Sox get him. They were set to trade Sonny Gray and Aroldis Chapman a little bit ago, but how about Chapman and Miller in the back of the pen? That's a team that could make a run through the American League. So, want to get your guys' thoughts on do you think Mason Miller will be traded? And if so, where does he go?
think we've seen this out of the Padres in the past. They've had excellent relievers on their team. I think we've kind of been getting at this throughout the course of the show. They've had some really good relievers on their team, but year over year of underperformance from the offense and from the starting rotation have kind of led them to usually sell those big pieces the further you get down the line. Thinking particularly of Juan Duran when he got traded to the Phillies. So I think it's possible that Miller winds up off the Padres by the trade deadline. The problem is I don't really know where he goes. If I'm a Yankee fan, I definitely don't want them to upset the bullpen right now, because Bednar has settled into his ninth inning role very, very well. And if you bring in a guy like Miller, the first question you have to ask is, who is the new closer? Or does Bednar stay the closer, rather, or do you give it over to Miller? Because in my opinion, you probably want Miller in the ninth inning over David Bednar. But Bednar has been the closer for the Yankees for the entirety of this season. So I don't know if you want to kind of mess with that equilibrium, because you're getting such good performances out of Bednar. If you move him to the eighth, he might not be the same type of guy. So I actually kind of I like what you mentioned about the Red Sox, though. I think that could be interesting, because Chapman has gotten more reliable in terms of his strike zone over the past year and a half or so. But that's a guy who he could lose it at any given time. So I think if you had Mason Miller, that way you could use Aroldis Chapman and then still have a solid lockdown closer behind him in case things go wrong. I think it makes a little bit more sense for the Red Sox. I'm just trying to think of other teams that are kind of lacking a closer at the moment.
But that's what I'm saying. It doesn't even have to be lacking a closer. Like, you can have a really great.
But this is Mason Miller. This is a bullpen defining guy who will be your ninth inning guy. If you already have a closer, you're probably looking to if you have pieces that you can move in a trade and you already have a closer on your team, you're not going to waste those guys on trading for Mason Miller. You're going to try and improve elsewhere because you don't need to get any better. That's why, like the Yankees, they need to get better at catcher and get depth at shortstop. Those are the two most pressing issues. Right, yes, they could make the bullpen better, but if you trade for another guy in the bullpen and then the shortstop and catcher position comes back to bite you in the postseason, there's nothing you can do in the offseason because all the pieces that you could have moved are gone in favor of Mason Miller.
Right, but how do you even upgrade the catcher and the shortstop position with who's available is what I'm saying.
Sometimes Coach Goodman off the Rockies.
That's like saying Poach Ohtani off the Dodgers to make your DH better. Like, so I don't know if Hunter Goodman's available. He's one of the best players in the game.
It's the Rockies. It's fine.
Yeah, who cares about the Rockies?
Oh, my God. I feel like, okay, are we still talking Mason Miller? we're going everywhere. Yes. But Mason Miller, I feel like, I mean, obviously, you know, the Yankees are in that conversation. I feel like I've also heard about, like, people like talking about the Phillies because of the whole Brad Keller of it all, and like maybe needing, like, you know, another just arm in the bullpen, given that I think it was announced that he's like expected to miss the rest of 2020. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, I was pretty sure that that's what I had heard. That's like an interesting choice. I don't know if that's like actually gonna happen. I feel like it is gonna be a team more like the Yankees, and I would also argue Max's point where it's like, don't settle for something that like go for long term. And I know that like everybody's trying to like do the most with this season given all of the uncertainty with next year in baseball, but I would go for longevity with the Yankees. Like, you do have a decent like lineup, just your guys just need to perform. And like, if you can't get someone who you think is going to be like a defining factor in how the rest of your season is going to go, beef up the bullpen. Like, why not? It's there. And like, I just think be smart about it. I think go for longevity.
Yeah. All right. I agree with that, honestly, mostly because you agreed with me and I feel very strongly on this point. We got about 5 minutes left before this Zoom meeting kicks us back to our respective cities. But, Chuck, I want to get your thoughts. You're going to the Hall of Fame induction ceremony this weekend. I believe last year I was either like beat reporting a Fordham men's game or demoing a Fordham women's game, and you mentioned that this ceremony is the thing you're most excited to do at FUV, at least at the time. So tell me your thoughts and how much money are you bringing to waste in the memorabilia shops around the Hall of Fame museum?
Well, I'll tell you what, Max, it's probably not going to be as much money as Chris Carino last year, but I still will probably be folding for some merch up in Cooperstown. Honestly, I'm most excited about this because I have been to Cooperstown before, but the last time I was there, I was 12 years old and I was playing baseball in Cooperstown. So it'll be interesting to be back as an adult and working. There's going to be reportedly upwards of 61 current Hall of Famers at the induction, the most there have ever been at a Hall of Fame induction this year. So that should be a pretty exciting opportunity to get some good interviews. We'll call into the live show to one-on-one on Saturday, so that should be fun too. Worth tuning into that, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on YouTube Live. I'm really excited to get up there. For me, I think I'm most excited to talk to Carlos Beltran if I get a chance. He's getting inducted this year, and he spent some good time with the New York Yankees, so it'll be interesting to see kind of what he can remember. I want to ask him his favorite moment from when he was a Yankee, so that should be fun. And yeah, just getting to spend a weekend up in not the home of baseball necessarily, but certainly baseball's holy ground. In Cooperstown with Grace McCarron, Curt Sippel, Alex Diaz, and of course Bobby Cheffredini, we couldn't forget. Yeah, it should be really fun, and we'll all have coverage all over the place. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, and don't ask Carlos Beltran about his 2017, unless you want to, which I would totally
No,
be in
trust
support
me.
of. I would totally be in support of it. Okay, Emma, anything else to add before we get out of here?
No, have fun, Tucker. It's gonna be a great time. It's gotta be a great time.
Okay, yeah, I certainly am I'm envious but happy that you guys are gonna get the opportunity. And if you have the chance, I don't know if you guys are driving up, but there is the world famous Roscoe Diner about 2.5 hours on the way, the best deep fried French toast in the world. Been there twice on my way to Cooperstown and Summers Prior, and I promise you it's gonna be the best 45 minutes or 2 hours, depending on how many pieces you can get down your throat of your life. So definitely enjoy that. All right, we'll do this again next week. And by we, I mean WFUV. We may or may not be here, but this is go time, guys. 10 days to go till the trade deadline. This is where a team's going to make their decision, buy, sell, or do something in the middle. For Max, I'm Max Langer. For Tucker Austin, Emma Leonardi, so long. Stay tuned for next week's episode of Nosebleeds.
Thank you.